Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxies, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke Bryan!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Hello and welcome. Happy Monday afternoon. You are listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Minus the Brian on this fine afternoon, but that's okay because we've got plenty to talk about in a short week leading up to the holiday, Thanksgiving, later this week. It's kind of one of those silly season weeks here in the state of Wisconsin and around the country. If you want to join the show, share your tangent with me today on this Monday afternoon, 844-967-2789. That is the number you can call or text. You're listening to Dueling Tangents across the Civic Media Network here in Madison, broadcasting live from the Solidarity Realty Studios on Madison's Near West Side on Devil Radio, 92.7 FM, WTTN, 1580 AM, across the network in Richland Center and Radio from the Center, locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, Lake Air in Amory, Oshkosh Air Support in Oshkosh, and the Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM out of Waukesha. Got Evan on the board helping me out this Monday afternoon. Evan, how you doing, my friend?
It was a fine weekend. Oh, man, it was so cold. Oh, it was cold.
What?
Man, it was...
You're from here.
It was
Stop
like
it.
5 degrees.
Stop it.
On Saturday. And you know what? It's too cold.
You were from Wisconsin, my friend. Are you
not?
Yeah,
yeah. It's still too cold, man.
It's still too cold?
I got a dog now. You feel me? I got to take Zelda outside. We got to go potty. You know?
We?
It's cold outside. Yeah,
she's got to go potty,
it's a
right?
Team effort.
I mean, walking the dog this time of year does kind of take a little bit getting used to, but it should be normal. This is late fall, early winter in Wisconsin. This isn't anything out of the ordinary. This isn't 64 inches of snowfall in a 24-hour period for the city of Buffalo. Come on, we should be grateful.
Yeah, we're counting our blessings over here.
And later in the show, I will be joined by Todd Alba, host of the Todd Alba Show here on Civic Media and WRCE in Richland Center, on Bull Falls Radio, WXCO in Wausau, and on Lake Air in Amory. And Todd's going to be joining me to talk about the World Cup, kind of a little continuation and add-on from our conversation with Hawk Sullivan last Friday about the World Cup. U.S. playing right now as we speak against Wales in their first round for Group B, I believe, play, and they're up 1-0 as of the last thing I saw. So they got a lead. Hopefully, Team USA will be able to continue that lead. But there's a lot of different things to unpack when it comes to talking about the World Cup, and so we're going to continue that conversation, discuss some of the kickoff coverage that occurred on various channels yesterday on Sunday, when the first match of the World Cup between Qatar and Ecuador kicked off. Depending on which outlet you were watching, the framing of this historic World Cup was varying. So we're going to talk about that with Todd Alba at 2:30. But again, if you want to share your tangent with me, 844-967-2789, we're going to lead off the hour with the story that we've been hearing a lot about over the last several months now. We have known that the state of Wisconsin has been put in pretty good fiscal shape. Now, some people think that Republicans do best with budgets. Others, if you look at, I don't know, say data, and examine presidencies by terms of economic success for the country, Democrats, typically, when they're in the White House, have better seeing of the economy. Now, there's many different factors that play into that. Here in the state of Wisconsin, we've seen analysis show that the Evers administration overseeing the state through the COVID-19 pandemic, more than any other state in the nation, prioritized small business and entrepreneurship in rebounding from the COVID-19 pandemic. Took more of the federal American Rescue Plan dollars and put it towards entrepreneurship and small businesses than any other state in the nation. And it may be paying off, because the state has a now projected $6.6 billion surplus. It is, just like this World Cup being hosted in Qatar, historic. And so this is the headline over at AP, the Associated Press. Wisconsin's projected budget surplus grows to $6.6 billion. Wisconsin's budget state surplus is now forecast to hit nearly $6.6 billion by July, up from an earlier $5 billion estimate, according to a report released Monday from Governor Tony Evers' administration. The Republican-controlled state legislature and Evers, a Democrat re-elected to a second term earlier this month, will be focused over the next several months on what to do with the money. Evers in August proposed spending $600 million of the surplus on tax cuts, including income taxes for the middle class by 10%. Republicans summarily rejected the idea as a campaign ploy. Evers will submit a two-year state spending plan in February. The legislature will then rework the plan and pass it likely in June or July. It's the typical schedule. Evers can make some changes through his partial veto power, but he signed nearly everything Republicans proposed into law in the past two budgets. Monday's report from the Evers Department of Administration said the state is in the strongest fiscal condition in its history and called the projected surplus remarkable. The report summarizes state agency budgets' requests for funding over the next 2 years. If all requests are approved, which never happens, according to this reporting from the AP, the report said spending would increase 7.9% in the 2023-2024 budget and another 2.5% the following year. And that is from the Associated Press here in Wisconsin, written up about the unprecedented $6.6 billion surplus that the state is expected to have at the end of this budget cycle come July 2023. And it is remarkable that this amount of money, and we knew it was going to be a large sum of money. Initial reports, it was going to be a $1.5 billion surplus. Then it went up to 3.4. Then it went up to $5.5 billion. Now we're at $6.6 billion in state surplus funds that the Republican legislature, as these reports came in, decided to do nothing last year. As this report from the Associated Press points out, they dismissed the tax cut proposal by the Evers administration because it was during a re-election cycle as an election ploy. Outright dismissing it, a special session was called, gaveled in, gaveled out. The same time the Republicans who were running for office, and many of them re-elected here in the state of Wisconsin, despite the fact that the top of the ticket saw tens of thousands of votes more than their counterparts, and assembly and state senate candidates being very gerrymandered into safe districts. Republicans are going to have nearly two-thirds in the state assembly and that two-thirds majority in the state senate. And even though they were also running for re-election, they could have used it to bolster their re-election campaigns. They were running on issues saying that costs were too high. Government spending was out of control. They didn't return the tax dollars to Wisconsinites. They could have went into that special session, debated how to return some of that surplus to Wisconsinites during election year. They put their feet up and they sat on their hands. They've been out of legislative session since the first week of March. And the tax revenues are still being collected. You and I, we're all still paying taxes. The state has more taxes on hand than it needs. And Republicans rejected a tax cut during election year because they thought it might help a Democratic governor get reelected as an incumbent. They also did it because they gambled. They were hopeful that if a Republican won, if Tim Michaels won the gubernatorial race here in the state of Wisconsin, that they could cut a massive tax cut or overhaul the tax system altogether here in the state of Wisconsin. Conservative organizations floated the idea of a flat tax. The Republican candidate, Tim Michaels, said that he was open to it. He didn't have a concrete tax plan for individuals to be able to assess and compare it to the budgets that the Evers administration had put out in years past, he didn't really have any specifics that he ran. Again, he was an empty suit candidate. He flew in from Connecticut, saw the way that the Republican primary was unfolding here in the state of Wisconsin, and took the opportunistic route, spent millions of dollars on ads to bolster his name to win the Republican primary, along with an endorsement of the former guy. But he had no concrete plans of what to do with this projected surplus. The Evers administration has a plan. Give a tax cut to hard-working, working-class Wisconsinites, and invest in public schools. We've seen the Evers plan. We know what the Evers plan is. Republicans have decided to sit on their hands and do nothing. And so Wisconsin is in the best economic shape it has been in its history, possibly. And we have no idea what the Republicans want to do. They didn't run on the candidate with a plan. They didn't propose any of these plans since the historic amounts. Again, this has been steadily increasing. We knew that the state was going to have money on hand to be able to return to Wisconsin taxpayers, or to be able to make historic investments and potentially address the looming crisis that the state has. We have a flawed shared revenue formula. While the state sits on this unprecedented surplus, local governments, county governments, city governments, village governments, town governments are facing funding gaps that will cause them to make the hard choices between offering services, letting people go, a variety of different things that wouldn't have to be had if the state returned this to local governments even. But instead, the Republicans are fine with, I don't know, a record number of ballot referendums to raise property taxes on citizens themselves to pay for these things. So we're going to get into a little bit more of that coming up in this next segment. We'll also take any phone calls that we get. 844-967-2789. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to be joined by Todd Alba, host of The Todd Alba Show here on Civic Media. You're listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Give me a call. We'll be right back.
Great success.
Put your hands up, keep your head down.
Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. You're listening across the Civic Media Network. If you want to learn more about what we're doing here at Civic Media, go to civicmedia.us. You can see all the stations, all the programs, learn more about us. You can also sign up to learn more and be the first in the know for any new stations that may be popping up around the state of Wisconsin. Again, the website, civicmedia.us. We got the headline out of the Evers administration's Department of Administration earlier today. $6.6 billion surplus by the end of July 2023. State's sitting on a large pile of cash. Republicans gambled this last election cycle that they could get an ally in the governor's mansion, pass either a massive tax cut or tax reform as a whole to send that $6.6 billion back to the wealthiest Wisconsinites. The individuals really suffering from inflation, Evan, if you know who I'm talking about. We're not going to be able to buy a second private jet this year because we're getting hit so hard from inflation.
Oh, we're not going to be able to show income for that next round of PPP loans.
Just let me move some money around to make sure
Tragic. It's, yeah.
Just the tragic. But we've also got some information out last week after Wisconsin voters went to the polls back just 2 weeks ago now, just under 2 weeks ago, that they hit record highs for ballot referendums. And this is a report written up by the Wisconsin Policy Forum, a record year for referenda. And it discusses, it's a very lengthy report, so I'm not going to be able to cover it all now here in this segment. But essentially, in all, there were more than 250 referendum questions, approving some types of them in record numbers, the state of Wisconsin did, according to this report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum, shifting the course for their local governments for years to come. In all, 104 of the referenda asked voters to allow a school district, town, city, village, or county to exceed state limits on local property taxes. In unofficial vote tallies, 82 of them, or 78.8%, passed. In approving them, voters authorized at least an additional $11.4 million in municipal and county property taxes for services such as public safety, as well as up to $299.6 million to operate K-12 schools and up to $1.4 billion in new debt for school buildings or other projects. So millions of dollars, billions of dollars passed in some cases for these local municipal school districts and counties, villages, towns, raising their own taxes, despite the fact that, again, folks, $6.6 billion on the state, in the state coffers by the end of July 2023. There is no logical sense for the Republican-led legislature to be sitting on that much money while these communities around the state are in need of these funds for very vital programs, for schools, for public safety. Milwaukee County is sitting on a fiscal cliff. And the Republican-led legislature does not care. In his re-election bid, Governor Tony Evers indicated that the local shared revenue formula here in the state of Wisconsin was one of the things that he wanted to focus on in re-election. And it is something that, again, we hear the talking points that Republicans are like, oh, we're going to have a renewed sense of communication with the city and county of Milwaukee. The Republican National Convention in 2024 is going to be held in Milwaukee. And there is no indication as of yet, and yes, it is pretty recent still after this last election, but there is zero indication that there are any changes at the Republican in the Republican leadership that will show a renewed sense that this is something that needs to be worked on. All of the same Republican leadership has been reelected. Voss is going to lead the Republicans in the state assembly. LeMahieu is going to lead the Republicans in the state Senate. We still haven't heard word from whether or not we're going to get to see nominees appointed right off the bat for the Evers administration, more than 100 of them waiting for appointment from his first term. Republicans are sitting on their hands. And yes, that leads to the $6.6 billion. Because they cannot, believe me, if Tim Michaels was elected or if former Governor Scott Walker was still in the governor's mansion, Republicans would have taken that surplus and did massive tax cuts already. The reason they are not seeing, we're not seeing any investment in the state of Wisconsin is because Republicans haven't figured out how they're going to try to weasel out a tax cut out of this. And the fact that we have this much money, and again, we're still seeing reports that the worker shortage that the state is going to experience, we're going to lose about 130,000 workers before 2023 if we don't do things to address the workforce shortages here in the state of Wisconsin. If at least $1 billion, if not more, is not directed towards fighting that problem, Republicans aren't serious about addressing the problems this state faces then. Because it is tremendous that we have this much, that coming out of the worst pandemic in 100 years, that we have this many resources, $6.6 billion to address problems we face as a state, is tremendous. So squeeze in one phone call here. We got Dick and Madison going to go to you before the break. Dick, what's on your mind this afternoon?
Well, thanks for stealing my thunder. Because I would certainly think that it should have something to do with, yes, keeping, and also I've read something about keeping young people here in general. They're leaving in droves.
Yeah, 18 to 29-year-olds leaving the state in droves.
Yep, and so they better really fine-tune something that makes it appealing to people in that age demographic, or we're going to have some serious problems.
Absolutely, Dick. And, you know, we could see solutions ranging from childcare, legalization of marijuana, investing in our schools so that young families want to raise their kids here and send them to the public schools. There's many different ways that it could be done, but it also involves doing your job and getting off your ass as a legislator, which the Republicans don't seem to be so inclined to do. We're going to continue the conversation and be joined by Todd Alba coming up next. You're listening to Dueling Tangents.
We're going to find him to recover from this.
Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. If you want to join the conversation, share your tangent. 844-967-2789. Those phone lines are open. You can also follow the show at Dueling Tangents on Twitter. You can follow Civic Media at Civic Media US. And here in the Solidarity Realty Studios, long walk down the hallway, I am now joined by Todd Alba, host of The Todd Alba Show. How are you doing, Todd?
I am fantastic. Great. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. It's a short week.
Yeah.
So it's been an interesting... There's a lot to get done over a short period of time then when we have short weeks because of the holiday.
Yeah, I got kind of a data project that our bosses gave us. So I'm doing that and getting ready for my show. And it feels crunched, but I'm like, if I could just get to Wednesday night.
Yeah, there you go. And then hopefully there's not too many last minute things that right. I got to change come Wednesday night. But yes, it's a short week, so it's a jam-pack filled week. But we're getting a lot done. We're having these conversations, and I really appreciate you joining me on this Monday afternoon.
Well, thanks for having me along.
Because I think we were both kind of keeping an eye out on the same thing yesterday. I saw you share an article from The Atlantic about the historic nature of this World Cup.
The bizarre nature. So I had this morning on our show... longtime friend and soccer aficionado, football aficionado, Joe Hassler Jr., who I worked with, and he actually spent time. His brother worked in Qatar for 2 years,
wow.
And so he went over there for a while. And
okay.
So, he had on ground experience, kind of gave us that perspective, but also just he has a journalism degree from UW, so he's a reporter mind.
Yeah,
and so I'll just share this opening line from the article in The Atlantic. Said, Qatar hosting the Soccer World Cup is like Donald Trump becoming president of the United States. It should not have happened. But the very fact that it has only exposes how bad things have become. I thought that was one of the best opening lines of an article I've ever read.
Yeah, there's very similar to how I believe it was NPR covered Trump's re-election, or not re-election, but relaunching his bid for the presidency in 2024. Talking about how he was the twice impeached president that fomented an insurrection after losing the popular vote in 2020, re-announcing that he was running for president once more. When you frame the things in a light like that, which I believe is the correct way it should be framed, talking about historic is a nice way to put the way you can discuss this World Cup. It is the first time that it has ever been held in an Arab country. It is the first time that it's ever been held in November. So things like that you can point out and are historic. But there's also a degree to which the historic nature of this World Cup is not something you can necessarily cast in a cozy light. And I don't... Did you...
No, go ahead.
You didn't get a chance to catch the game yesterday, correct?
I saw a couple of highlights. I did not see the whole game, no.
Okay, so the other historic nature, first time in World Cup history that the host nation lost... the opening game. Mm-hmm. That's another historic aspect. But a lot of the... And Fox is covering. Fox mm-hmm. is the U.S. affiliate. Fox Sports, FS1, are the networks hosting these games for United States watchers. And so if you're watching here in the United States, you kind of got a glossy view of talking about it. It
imagine
being
that.
Historic. It was very... Mm-hmm. Some of the individuals I follow online were talking about how it was like, well, this is straight out of authoritarian's playbook to have it discussed in this light, not discussing it in the other historic aspects of it. And one of the contrasts that, as I saw, was the BBC, British Broadcasting, covered it in a very different light. And I think it's important, and I'm not going to paraphrase because I got the sound, so we can use it. And so, Evan, if you could for us, this was the BBC commentator on prefacing the historic nature of the World Cup that kicked off in Qatar yesterday afternoon here, but yesterday evening in Qatar.
Ever since FIFA chose Qatar back in 2010, the smallest nation to have hosted football's greatest competition has faced some big questions. From accusations of corruption in the bidding process to the treatment of migrant workers who built the stadiums where many lost their lives. Homosexuality is illegal here. Women's rights and freedom of expression are in the spotlight. Also, the decision 6 years ago to switch the World Cup from summer to winter. Against that backdrop, there's a tournament to be played, one that will be watched and enjoyed around the world. Stick to football, say FIFA. Well, we will, for a couple of minutes at least.
And ever so since FIFA that was the coverage from the BBC on the opening ceremony and the first match that took place yesterday. And I think that the framing around these national networks that they were doing on behalf of these games is very important. And one of the things the reporter there from BBC mentioned is the illegality of LGBTQ rights in Qatar. And something else the BBC did, one of their reporters, Alex Scott, she's an on-the-field reporter for BBC, was at the game today, England's inaugural match of the tournament against Iran kicked off. They won 6-2. Mm-hmm. Pretty good shellacking there for as things go. So England's in good shape. The reporter, though, she recently out, and she wore the armband that FIFA banned England from wearing on the pitch. The captains were going to wear it was roughly a heart, I believe, was the shape with a rainbow across the heart, and in solidarity of LGBTQ community. And this reporter did something that those captains then that were banned, they didn't. Those captains could have said, FIFA, shove it. I'm still going to wear this band. Mm. They didn't. Alex Scott, a recently out reporter for BBC, woman of color as well. So minority across the board. She wore that armband on the sideline reporting that she did for BBC today during England's match. And I think that's the bravest thing that I've seen so far of this World Cup. I'm hoping that there are going to be other similar aspects of protest when it comes to how these athletes perform. I only got to see side coverage so far of US's game. I know they're currently playing right now against Wales. But I have a feeling we're going to see similar acts of protest from potentially reporters, athletes on the pitch. But what are your thoughts around that historic nature?
I agree with you. I mean, it is courageous because you're in an authoritarian government. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a quote unquote royally family governed nation, authoritarianism. So, you know, the idea of justice in a country like that leaves a lot to be desired. And so a person could just be picked up off the street and put in prison, and whether or not you actually have a fair trial or anything like that is, you know, not certain, to say the least. So to have that ability to step forward and be courageous like that, yeah, I give her a lot of applause because it's a lot of risk personally to her.
Yeah, no, it's a tremendous amount of risk. And there were individual stories I saw of people just wearing fans, crowd goers to these games, wearing T-shirts in solidarity of migrant workers and in with the LGBT community, and they were being turned away by security. Wow. At the door,
wow,
telling them that they could not wear those T-shirts into the stadiums for the games. And so there's definitely an interesting aspect of the fact that this tournament, the biggest sporting event in the world, like whether if you're a Packer fan, like think of the Super Bowl but on steroids times at least 100.
Yeah,
that's what the World Cup is nationally or internationally, excuse me. And the fact that this sport, like the shut up and dribble mentality, I feel like now more than ever needs to be just done away with, because you can't just expect these games to take place like it's anything normal. The normalization in this sports washing of what's going on in Qatar, yes, I'm rooting for the USA. Mm-hmm. My personal preferred team is Germany. When they won 8 years ago, I was ecstatic. I love following the Bundesliga better than U.S. soccer, and there's reasons. But U.S. soccer has come along. The fact that they are back at the tournament this year is exciting as well. But it's a very interesting dynamic to be able to watch these games with such excitement and then in the background know what happened to bring these games to Qatar and what's currently going on as these games are played in front of our very eyes.
Joe and I, my guest this morning, chatted about, I had a professor back in college, Jack O'Neill at Platteville, and he'd come into this classroom every period. He'd write a big dollar sign on the bar, on the chalkboard or the dry erase board. Mm-hmm. He'd point to it and he'd say, "All comes down to that. What to do in your world?" And at the time, like, what the heck does he mean? And now I know, right? And so these games, it all comes down to the dollar sign. I mean, Qatar bought these games, hook, line, and sinker. And Joe made the point this morning, you know, the United States bought the 96 Olympics when it came to Atlanta. And so it was Coca-Cola basically that said, "We want this here," a major world corporation. So you look at the games of Qatar, and you can see the human rights violations, reports that over 6,500 lives were lost during the course of building this entire event, putting it, you know, as you said, in the middle of a desert. They'd had to change it to the winter. So,
you pointed out to me that they're paying the salaries for all of these players that are coming to these national teams that are out of season right now for because typically the World Cup is held from the end of June to July.
And the European League is in the middle of their season. I can't even think of a U.S. I mean, I guess it'd be like, you know, think of like, you know, October playoff baseball. And suddenly there's an all-star game where they have to shut it down for 3 weeks or 2 weeks in the middle of playoff season for baseball and have an all-star game. I mean, it's just preposterous.
It flipped the entire football world on its head, and it is absolutely asinine almost to think that this is happening. And I agree with you. The opening to the Atlantic article is pretty much one of the best written pieces on the aspect of these games being in Qatar.
Well, it comes down to money, and it comes down to the fact that Qatar has the cash, and like, you know, this league and European League of Football better than I do, football, not American football. You know, there are European players who are getting hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And many of these clubs in Europe are also owned by Arab interests.
Yep.
And now you see the same thing happening in golf with the LIV League.
Oh, yeah. You got plenty of Emirates that are either purchasing stakes in, I believe, Liverpool and I'm not going to say all the different clubs, but there are private English clubs that are now have controlling interests from foreign money that wants to be able to promote their countries and their flight, their airlines, and all of the different aspects to it. They want to bring you to the Middle East for the tourism side of things, but do away with the human rights violations, the anti-LGBT, anti-women, all of those aspects that they don't want to play up. They're using sports to better their image.
And why is that, Luke? Geez, I wonder why that is. And if you look at this article, and we talked to a friend of mine who used to be in the Danish parliament last week. He was at in Egypt for the World Conference on Climate Change. There were a lot of, according to him, there were a lot of petroleum interest folks from Texas at that cup. Why? Because they figured out that green energy, renewable energy, clean energy has suddenly turned to the point where it can become profitable. And as fossil fuels go down, i.e. oil, what are these countries going to make their money on? So exactly to your point, they're trying to make a niche in entertainment, in sports, in hopes that they could lure people there. And you know, forget about democracy for a while. Forget about human rights or anything else.
Just watch the football
game. Just have a football game.
Just watch the soccer match, whatever you want to call it.
Sit in Dubai or wherever you want to go and just enjoy life, you know?
And it's a fascinating aspect that if we don't talk about it, then they're going to get exactly what they want.
Exactly.
But we have to have the conversation because sports is the great uniter. That's what's so special about it. Like the Miracle on Ice and the first Lambeau Leap and just like things like that are like immortalized in sport are fantastic and they bring people together, but then when you use it for nefarious purposes, it can be really, really upsetting. I'm joined by Todd Alba, host of the Todd Alba Show here at Cross Civic Media in Richland Center on WRCE, Bull Falls Radio WXCO in Wausau, and Lake Eyre in Amory, Wisconsin. And we're going to continue this conversation. We're talking about the World Cup happening in Qatar. U.S. about to wrap up their game, and we're going to be back after a quick break. 844-967-2789. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. If you want to join the conversation, share your tangent, 844-967-2789. We've got Evan on the board and Todd Alba joining us here in the studio. And we're discussing the World Cup that is currently underway. It kicked off yesterday with the inaugural match between hosts Qatar and Ecuador. Ecuador winning 2-0 in that one, handing for the first time ever the host nation defeat in the opening match of a World Cup. And that's an historic aspect of this tournament. Again, we've covered a lot of the different historic nature, the fact that at least 6,500 migrant laborers, because again, very small country. Qatar did not have the labor to be able to construct these magnificent stadiums. Like if you watched the game yesterday or any of the games so far this morning, they are state-of-the-art. Like imagine SoFi Field, the multi-billion dollar stadium in LA now. That kind of level stadium in Qatar that just never had any form of infrastructure for this sporting event that they are currently underway. At least 6,500 migrant laborers dying in the process of constructing those stadiums. And we're talking about soccer, football, however you want to discuss it. I saw the Lays did a really good job. They got David Beckham and Peyton Manning to do an ad.
Really? I didn't.
And yes, it's a very good ad between the two of them talking about whether it's football or soccer. And then David Beckham slips up and he goes, "I own my own soccer club. I know." And Peyton Manning kind of gets him. And he's like, "Oh, you just said soccer." And so it was a whole thing about chips versus crisps. And it was a good ad. I like that one. And so you admit it, not a huge soccer fan.
Me myself, though, I appreciate the game. Mm-hmm. I love the flow of it. I think that's great. I mean, much better than American football with all the timeouts and all that stuff, you know, right? So I love the flow of it. I appreciate the athleticism it takes.
Oh, I did not. I played soccer throughout high school. Wow. And when I started playing, I did not have the appreciation for how much running it was.
but
do you quickly learn? You're right. Like, oh my gosh. Best shape of my life. Senior year, I was on the drum line and on the varsity soccer team. And through the running and the calf workouts from marching, best shape of my life ever. I will never be as fit as I was 17 years old on the soccer team and on the drum line.
That's fantastic.
But it seems like the U.S. is going to end this first match here. There's a little stoppage time that they're currently underway with, but 1-1 tie. Between Wales and the United States men's team. So it looks like it's going to be a draw their first one. And you said that was kind of an aspect that you're not too fond of.
I'm an Americanized soccer/football fan, right? So I admit that. I admitted that in the Sporting Hours show. That's why I brought my friend Joey, because he's a fanatic. Ever since he was younger than high school, I've been following it. And that's fair. So when I went to high school, we never even had soccer until my senior year.
Okay.
So I mean, this was a sport that was just very, it would be like, say we're going to introduce cricket to high school sports today. Really?
Yeah. Well, for a very long time, that's how it was. There was just not, the public schools didn't have soccer programs if you didn't have enough kids to play in them.
And so I admit that I have a built-in bias because of my age or my lack of experience, whatever, but I've come to appreciate it because I have a lot of friends from Central America. My college roommate was from El Salvador. And, he would sit there and watch 4 hours of soccer. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, that's not even your team. That's not even your country.
But it's a good match. That's all that matters. That's where I
feel like I wouldn't just sit down and watch like a Ravens and Bills game for no reason. I'll have it on, but I'm not going to sit there and watch every play and get all into it.
Yeah.
But I think that's what I've come to appreciate about the excitement of soccer is that people appreciate the play.
Yeah.
And whether it's their team or not, you know, they appreciate the play. But the sport is just structured different than an Americanized kid growing up in Southwest Wisconsin experience.
Yeah.
So I bring that natural bias to it, but I appreciate the sport. Yeah. But yes, the whole aspect of ties.
Well, you got to hope if you're a bad team and you want to try to eke out a point or two out of this first round of group play, you're hoping for a draw. Obviously, you want to go in trying to get the win.
Right.
But if you're a goal behind or anything like that, you're hoping to get that one goal to equalize and get the point that you would get out of the draw rather than taking the flat out 0 points for a defeat.
Two problems here. One, this is all very mathematical, and I don't have a mathematical brain. If I'm going to, from a fan standpoint, sit down and invest time and energy in cheering and getting excited, I want to come away either happy or sad. I don't want to be milquetoast. I don't want to come away with, we're the exact same spot we started in the beginning.
Yeah.
College football used to be that way, right? You could end in a tie. And whatever, 15, 20 years ago, they changed that. Yeah. So,
now the overtime rules in college, I think, should be applied to the NFL, honestly. Because the fact that an NFL, National Football League game can end in a tie, I do think is a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because, what is it, a 10-minute overtime period now, and it's a draw? College, start the ball at the 25-yard line, and you go until somebody doesn't score anymore. And that's fun. And that's like a shootout. And that will happen after group play.
Right.
If you have a draw or a tie at the end of regular full time, you go to shootout. Play an overtime period as well, though. So you play full time, and then overtime, you got, I believe it's 20 or 30 minutes. I want to say it's 30 minutes. And you play 30 minutes of overtime, and then if that doesn't happen, then it goes to shootout.
Which was it, World Cup 4 years ago or 8 years ago that Italy won? They went down to overtime shootout at the end?
It's been a while since Italy won. Italy hasn't won. Because 4 years ago, France won.
Yep.
Mbappe, huge young sensation for France, propelled them to victory. Germany, my preferred team to win, won in 14. And then I believe Italy, I could be wrong, but I think Italy might have won in South Africa.
But the point is that, yes, when they get into a certain level of the World Cup or a certain, you know, game, when they do the shootouts, that's like a shootout in hockey, right?
It's fantastically
exciting.
It's fantastic. Yeah,
it's great television.
Oh yeah, and so I'm gonna have as many of these games on in the background. I had the U.S. game as I was prepping for today's show on next to me, and I was kind of keeping an eye out. And they had a terrific goal.
People should know that Luke has no fewer than 15 screens around his desk. It's like a CBS television production, right? It's like a truck. He's backed up a truck of TV production crews and satellites. He has every game on live at all times.
If you hear one loud clap or like a very try to be muted, like woohoo, that's usually me watching and seeing a goal, because that's what happened when the U.S. scored their first one today. Yesterday, I was watching the Qatar-Ecuador game, and Valencia scored for Ecuador, and it got taken back because of offsides, but it was this spectacular header, and I like the whole house was quiet, but it was on and the game was playing, and my fiance, I believe, was reading her book, and I started cheering very loud, and she kind of just shut it up and was like, "What the heck are you so loud for?" And I was like, "It was a great goal," and then I went back to doing what I was doing. So I'm looking forward to being able to do that for the next month.
It's going
to
be fantastic.
It's going to be a lot of good
games. Regardless whether you're an avid fan like you or a passive fan like me, it's a great time. It's a great tournament. And there's a lot of atrocities. But at some point, as Joe said this morning, it is what it is. And you can either be a hermit and just ignore it, or you get out and you enjoy it. And you acknowledge some of the things that have gone wrong, and you try to do your little part to change that. But you have to also just enjoy the sport and enjoy the tournament.
Yeah, the cup definitely needs to be enjoyed still. But having these conversations about what's going on around the cup and how it got to where we are important as well. Todd Alba, host of the Todd Alba Show. Check out civicmedia.us to learn more. You've been listening to Dueling Tangents. We'll be back tomorrow at 2 p.m. We'll talk to you then. Thanks so much, Todd.
Thank you.